This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. This is the Matt McNeil Show, but I'm not Matt McNeil. I'm Todd Mickelson. As we told you yesterday, Matt has tested positive for coronavirus. But last I heard, he's doing fine. I think very mild, if not no symptoms, is what I saw him report on Twitter a couple hours ago. So sounds like he's doing all right, and hopefully he'll be back on Monday. But I'm in for him here today, and I just drove in a big snowstorm. And I actually kind of enjoy driving in snowstorms, but this one is some of the roads are really, really slippery, so be careful. I can tell you that if I did not have an all-wheel drive vehicle, I don't think I would have made it here. And I know Brett, he has a two-wheel drive, and he couldn't get into the parking lot, so he had to park, somewhere else. Just to report further, the slipperiest parts were actually on the roads that I would think, would be the best condition. I was on Highway 394 and 494, and they were really slick, more slick than the smaller roads that still actually have snow on them. It's almost like when they got the snow off the roads, then the wetness froze because it's about 15 degrees, so it's a lot colder than it was yesterday. So be very careful. There were about 200 crashes before noon today. I don't see an update past noon today, but there were 22 injuries, none of them life-threatening. But 159 crashes, and then 66 vehicles have, just slipped off the road. So be very, very careful. The storm is, it's pretty interesting. It's been moving southeast. So a line like the bottom, the south, oh, I'm so bad at reading maps and talking at the same time. The southwestern part of the Twin Cities, about 4 to 6 inches. The northeastern part of the Twin Cities, maybe 2 inches. So the Twin Cities is right on the edge of it. So it's worse down toward, Redwood Falls and Mankato. And we're kind of on the northern edge of the storm. And I would say that we've got a good 5 inches already on the ground here in Eden Prairie and out from where I came out by Lake Minnetonka. I would say about 5 inches right now, and it's supposed to keep snowing. So be very, very careful and think twice about even driving at all unless you've got a pretty robust vehicle with all-wheel drive. So that's that report. A lot to get to today. There's all kinds of stuff going on. There's a story about the St. Thomas College Republicans again. There's this thing going on with forged electors from up to 7 states now. There's an update on that. There's Matt Gaetz, Walter closing in. Schools are going remote out where I am in West Tonka schools. I believe the high school is going remote for a couple of weeks. And because of the numbers out in the area, they're starting to have mask mandates at one of the elementary schools. And Foo Fighters are making a movie, a scary movie. That's a big update. Looks like they're. It's a movie about them going into a haunted house to make their next record. And I don't know. It looks good. Who doesn't like? Give us a call if you do or don't like the Foo Fighters. 952-946-6205. There's I was going to maybe, I don't know, I'm thinking of doing the
Casey Kasem's countdown of the stupidest antics of the GOP this week.
And maybe doing an update on the gubernatorial GOP candidates. There is one DFL gubernatorial candidate, and he's got a lot of platform ideas. He's got a lot of things that he talks about that he is doing and wants to do. The Republicans pretty much just complain about him. They don't really seem to be putting up much. Gazelka's trying to put something up, but it's, you know, probably going to put him on the chart of
Casey Kasem's countdown of the stupidest things that Republicans did this week.
So, not very creative ideas going on right now with the Republican Party. As a matter of fact, the Republican Party, we can call them the party with no platform. They, in fact, had no platform at their convention in 2020. That's, of course, the whole reason for a convention is to talk about the platform. The caucuses and convention, that's where you know, the delegates vote to put measures in the platform, basically maintaining the party's platform. Well, the Republicans didn't even talk about a platform. They didn't even have a platform. They didn't present one. They had no votes on any platform or anything of the such in 2020. Nobody knows what their platform is. And now they're saying that they don't want any of their presidential candidates to be in any debates. So what is going on with that? Why will they not talk to us? What are they hiding? If you have ideas on that, give us a call as well. So on for 2 hours today. Again, I'm Todd Mickelson. Patrick is here with us. Hey, Patrick. How you doing?
Good. Foo Fighters, I got to be in the mood for them, to be honest. Not quite like Nirvana. I can kind of just listen to them if they're on. The Foo Fighters kind of don't – I don't know how to put it. I mean, I don't hate them. I think they're good. I just don't know when I feel like listening to them.
Yeah, they're almost – to me, they're a bit like elevator music. They kind of – you know, a lot of their songs sound the same. They have a lot of records out. They're fun. Their personalities are fun. Their shows are cool. Dave Grohl is a cool guy. You know, all the guys seem to be really cool guys. But yeah, I don't listen to their records, really. I don't choose to listen to them. But if they're on, then it's like, oh, cool, Foo Fighters, you know. That's what I meant when I say I don't think anyone really has a strong dislike for the Foo Fighters. And I'm not sure if people have a strong like for the Foo Fighters either. So, yeah. Nirvana, I don't know. I OD'd on them when they were new. So now if they come on the radio, I actually switch away.
Well, Nirvana for me kind of goes against the way it usually does when I listen to a band, because I like this. I really like the stuff that Nirvana, the stuff that you hear on the radio, Smells Like Teen Spirit, trying to think of All Apologies. That's one of my favorites. But then I get into their album and I'm like, I don't like this. I don't like the stuff that I don't like the deep cuts from Nirvana.
Yeah. Probably the stuff that the band likes the most is what you don't like. But yeah. Anyway, I just thought that was worth mentioning. The Foo Fighters, I've been seeing a lot of ads for this movie they're coming out with. So there's also, talking about the party of no platform, there's a good idea by somebody, I'm going to bring it up later, but a good idea by a Democrat that to try and do something about crime and police reform at the same time. Again, not defunding the police, but police reform. And it's going to get talked about in the state legislature this year, which starts, I want to say next week or the week after. So, yeah, it's – wow, that came up fast. All of a sudden, we're going to be in the legislative session. By the way, we are hoping to hear from a state senator in the second hour, waiting to hear on that. Everything feels kind of a scheduling-wise kind of a mess. I mean, like I said yesterday, I got a call about 3 hours before I was supposed to be on the air, finding out that I was going to be on the air. And schedules change fast because of COVID. And now we're in the middle of kind of a pretty serious snowstorm. So, but we are hoping to hear from a state senator, hopefully in the second hour. But yeah, I'll give you. I know Matt gives a COVID update, a Minnesota COVID update as well, and we can probably just do that real quick right now. And things are still not looking good, but in some places, like I heard in New York, things are starting to look better. The numbers are starting to go down, and it's kind of looking like Minnesota is right, probably on the cusp of beginning to go back down. Looks kind of like a possible plateau, but it's really hard to tell. And of course, we don't have a lot of the numbers aren't accurate because a lot of people test positive and they don't report it. So, but of course, the numbers in the hospitals are solid. So Friday's COVID-19 update from the Minnesota Department of Health includes 11,560 newly reported cases and 32 newly reported deaths. And so the total death toll is up to almost 11,000 right now. So the way where we want to be, you know, we were at a point where we just had, you know, like two or three deaths a day a few months ago. Now we're up to 32. And also, I think an important number is the percentage of positivity in tests. Minnesota's test positivity rate on a seven-day rolling average was through January 6th was 21.6%, which is another record high in Minnesota. Of course, anything over 10% puts us in the danger zone, and we are wanting to stay 5% or less in order. Back when we had the shutdown, we were saying we were going to stay shut down until we had 5% or less. So 21.6 is not good. Hopefully, we will be turning around. A lot of optimism going on for maybe by the middle of February will be the Omicron the Omicron variant of the disease will be kind of petered out. We just need to hope that there's not another one on its way. But vaccines are more people are getting vaccinated because of this scare. And in Canada, at least in one town in Canada or one province in Canada, they have a vaccine mandate. And of course, vaccines went way, way up really fast. So, you know, in the United States, though, we're going backwards on that. The Supreme Court, of course, taking away the rule for a vaccine mandate in companies that have more than 100 employees. Most people who know what they're talking about in law think the wrong decision. I agree with them because there is a statute that OSHA can be empowered to basically protect Americans when there's an unusual thing going on. That's pretty much the definition of this. So the Supreme Court has just taken that away. And, of course, Republicans are rejoicing, and I believe that's because Republicans would love for the virus to stick around until 2024 so that they can keep griping about it all the way up to the presidential election. And I think that's a big reason why they are doing all of this anti-vax mis and disinformation. And, you know, they don't seem to care about the wellness, well-being of American people. Or any people, and they just want Biden to fail, and that means more Americans die. So whatever it takes for Biden to fail, it seems like for Republicans, they're certainly not coming up with any ideas to help. They're not lifting a finger to try and pitch in and help through these different things. They're complaining about a lot of things that are not happening. I have yet to see any place. Patrick, have you seen any place where the shelves are empty in a grocery store?
Not lately.
Yeah, I haven't for, you know, since the 2020 beginning when everybody was buying too much toilet paper. But I have not seen empty shelves. And I've been in a handful of grocery stores over the last couple weeks, and I have not seen any empty shelves whatsoever. I don't know why they're talking about that. So anyway, why don't we take a break and we'll come back and pick one of these many things to talk about. At 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, I'm Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt McNeil for one more day. We'll be right back. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. That sounds like Foo Fighters. Is it Foo Fighters? See, I don't even know their songs. I just know kind of what they sound like.
I have no idea, but you're right. It does sound like them. My other thought was, did I wake you up in the studio? Because you kind of jumped up when I started playing that music.
I thought it was another commercial. And then so all of a sudden I was like, oh, this is just music. I think I'm supposed to be talking right now. So, yeah. I don't know. My brain's a little off today. I don't know why. I'm having trouble concentrating. But, we were talking about the party with no platform. There's Senator Limmer in the Minnesota State Senate. He's considering cutting the budgets for Ramsey and Hennepin County offices if they don't go harder on suspects in violent crimes. Again, no ideas on how to help crime. Let's just cut the budgets of the county attorney's offices. Wouldn't that make crime even worse? Seems like it would. No good ideas. I tweeted something. Somebody tweeted. They say, Dems, please wear a mask. Republicans, no. Dems, please get vaccinated. GOP, no. Please respond to respect our voting rights. No. Please help us find out who attacked us. No. Please help us feed our kids. No. Please help our teachers. No. It's, what ideas are they contributing to help? Mitch McConnell went on a big tirade complaining about Joe Biden's speech. And in reality, it seems like most people are really praising Joe Biden's speech that he gave, where he was comparing people who, he was bringing up the Confederacy and comparing people who are against voting rights to being, like the Confederates. And Mitch McConnell, his feelings really got hurt by that. We'll talk about that a little bit more in depth, because some people are saying that Mitch McConnell's reaction is actually helping the Dems' messaging on all of this stuff. So talking about crime, let's talk about some ideas that actually are good ideas. This guy's talking about innovation. Should have wrote down his name. But it's a legislator in Minnesota. It'll come through here in the Cedric Fraser. All Minnesotans deserve to be safe in their communities. When crime is trending upward in our own backyards, we need to solve the problem and address its root causes. So I'm reading from the Star Tribune. In the backdrop of COVID-19, economic uncertainty, and general societal social upheaval, Minnesota is experiencing an unacceptable rise in crime. We need a proven plan to keep people safe, not just complaining and trying to defund people. So the plan that Cedric Fraser he will introduce in the upcoming legislative session is a public safety innovation package built upon a $100 million investment in scaling up community crime prevention services, bolstering community confidence in law enforcement, and providing targeted funding for local law enforcement innovation. And so, just to make some comments on that, for local law enforcement innovation, there have been a lot of good ideas in other cities, out east actually, and in Chicago. They have a lot of programs where the police interact with the community. Another really good thing would be to actually hire police where they live. We have a lot of policemen who live in Minneapolis going and being a cop somewhere else, and then we have a lot of police who live in outstate Minnesota commuting in to be a cop in Minneapolis. And they don't know the community. And it sounds like a lot of these cops, I mean, if you've listened to the Matt McNeil show, you've heard a lot of the stories about some of these cops seem to be downright hateful of the people of Minneapolis. So scaling up community crime prevention services, that is that you could correlate that with the whole problem of homelessness and the mental health institutions being cut down. During the Reagan administration, mental health institutions were cut by 75% in this country. So then you have a whole bunch of people who need to be in a facility like that, who now they really can't function in life, so they're homeless. So we have a lot of people with mental disabilities who are homeless. That does not help in crime. That's where, you know, you have a lot of police shootings where there's somebody who's got a mental illness going on, and they're acting in a way that makes the police panic and shoot them. You know, so you can go back to the Reagan administration for some of these inherent things that are, you know, everything's intertwined. And so we really need to do a much wider view, you know, from, you know, like I like to use the term satellite view. Go up and look down at everything. Look at the past, look at the future, and look all around the issue that you're trying to solve. And you're going to learn a lot more ways. You're going to come up with a lot more ideas on how to solve that issue. Getting back to this article where Cedric Frazier writes, during the first week of session, I plan to hold hearings to gather input on this bill. I invite everyone to participate. He says, let's unpack the components. First, community crime prevention services are in this bill because they work. Research in the American Sociological Review shows that in a city of 100,000, each 5 new nonprofit community organizations led to a 6% drop in the homicide rate, a 5% reduction in the violent crime rate, and a 3.5% reduction in the property crime rate. This is why we need permanent investments to create more nonprofits dedicated to violence prevention. It will save lives. You know, some things like that, like you hear a lot of reformers, you know, guys who used to be like in gangs and stuff like that. And they put together groups to help kids stay out of gangs. You know, those kind of things. Nonprofits dedicated to violence prevention. That sounds like a good idea to me. Second, community confidence in law enforcement is a part of this bill because it is vital to ensuring that police are able to gather intelligence from residents. Another study in the American Sociological Review found that 911 calls fell following a highly publicized case of police misconduct. So when the police perform misconduct, which we've seen a lot of that in Minnesota over the last 2 years or so, people don't trust the police anymore. They don't call 911 because they're starting to think that having the police involved would be a bad thing instead of a good thing. So he says, taking steps to restore community confidence by increasing police transparency and accountability positively affects public safety by restoring the best line of intelligence any law enforcement agency has, a vigilant citizenry. So when the police can talk to the citizens, they can get to the truth a lot easier. So we need the citizens to trust the police. We need the citizens to not be afraid to answer questions the police are asking. One more point before we go to a break here. Lastly, funding law enforcement foot patrol and investigatory best practices also work. Every major law enforcement and academic study reveals what we already know. Crime is less likely in the immediate vicinity of law enforcement, and increasing clearance rates allows law enforcement to solve crimes and help prevent criminals from reoffending. We'll talk more about this when we come back from the break, but these sound like good ideas being put forth. This guy's put Cedric Frazier's put a lot of work into it, and he's going to present a bill and invites everybody you and me, everybody, to come and give their ideas to add to these ideas I just read. So let's take a break and come back and talk more about this. You're listening to AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. If you would like to talk about it as well, call 952-946-6205. We'll be right back. Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt McNeil, waiting for that club drum fill. You're listening to AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. We're talking about Representative Cedric Frazier's bill he's going to introduce in the first week of the legislative session in Minnesota. Cedric Frazier is the House representative for District 45A. Some of the cities in 45A, New Hope, Plymouth, Crystal, in Hennepin County. And he goes on to write in recent years, and this is what kind of why I was talking about this, he's putting up some really good ideas. And the Republicans, you know, here's what he says. In recent years, my Republican colleagues in the legislature have been the biggest barrier to public safety innovation and have instead resorted to fear-mongering, political point scoring, and calls to incarcerate our way out of our current situation. This is not a plan to provide public safety. I'm also at some point today going to talk about Paul Gazelka. He's proving Cedric Frazier's point perfectly in his plans to run for governor. In fact, the Republican Senate has proposed cutting millions in state funding for local law enforcement, ignored major funding requests brought by victim organizations, and refused to adequately fund drug use treatment and prevention programs. Instead, my colleagues on the other side of the aisle, the Republicans, have worked tirelessly to redistribute our shared resources to the wealthiest individuals and biggest corporations in the form of tax cuts at the expense of making the investments needed to sustain a core function of government. The Republican approach has left Minnesota flat-footed and unprepared to address the ongoing public safety challenges. Now, that is an accurate statement. The Republicans keep saying, oh, the liberal-run cities, the liberal city council in Minneapolis, they don't know how to handle crime. Well, it's hard to handle crime when you've basically stripped all the resources away from trying to come up with some solutions like Cedric Frazier is doing here. He goes on to write, all Minnesotans deserve to be safe in their communities. When crime is trending upward in our own backyards, we need to solve the problem and address its root causes. I am bringing this package forward because Minnesota needs an innovative, nonpartisan, research-based solution that meets the scale of the problem. This $100 million proposal is based on the belief that by working together, we can innovate our way out of the problem instead of accepting political gridlock on public safety issues as the new normal. Because that has been what's been going on since this whole mess has begun. Of course, the pandemic doesn't help at all either. But $100 million for something like this is not a lot of money. We've got a $7.7 billion surplus right now, and that some of the numbers coming in over the last month or so say that that surplus is probably going to grow and be even more in a couple months when they do the review then more toward the end of the legislative session, and it usually goes up. Sounds like it's going to again. So basically, yeah. After saying that, I think we can do a
Casey Kasem's countdown of the dumbest antics of the GOP over the last period of time. Our next, let's see, I don't know what number this is. Number five, let's say. Number five. Our next artist is Paul Gazelka. He was the leader of the Republicans in the Senate in the state of Minnesota. Now, he's running for governor. What he wants is new mandatory minimums for carjackings and signing bonus for police. Big topics: crime, indoctrination in our schools, and election integrity.
So they're talking against everything. They're going backwards. They're not talking into the future for the 2022 election. They're talking still about the 2020 election. When he says election integrity, they're scared. They're still scared of Donald Trump. So Paul Gazelka saying new mandatory minimums. I mean, we have been incarceration. The jails are full. Now, of course, this is another thing starting from back, in the Reagan years. Privatizing jails and prisons. Now, they're businesses. They need to make money. Well, if you're a prison and you want to make money, you want your prison to be full of prisoners. And over the last 40 years, we have thrown way too many people in for very minor crimes. You know, having a bag of weed in your glove compartment of your car and you get 5 years in prison. You know, of course, this is usually happens to people of color. And Paul Gazelka's idea is new mandatory minimums. He wants people to stay longer in prison. And mandatory minimums, isn't it the Republicans who talk about that, you know, if the lawbreakers are going to break the law anyway, they don't care about mandatory minimums. They plan on not getting caught. You know, you don't talk to a criminal and say, hey, listen, if we catch you, we'll be harder on you. The criminal's going to go, yeah, but see, my plan is for you to not catch me. You know, this is how they say, you know, if we're going to have more gun legislation, if we're going to have gun safety laws, they say, oh, that they won't do any good. The bad guys are still going to get their guns anyway. Okay, well, the bad guys are still going to commit crimes no matter what their mandatory minimum is. Donald Trump bragged about cutting mandatory minimums. That was one of the decent things he did. Of course, he was talked into it by Kim, what's her name on that reality show. You know, he takes advice from people who are on TV only. And why can't I remember the name of that show, Patrick? I've never seen an episode of it, but it was like Kardashian.
Yeah, Kim Kardashian, yeah.
Yeah. Kim Kardashian says, hey, you know, you should get some of these young black guys out of jail. And Trump is like, yeah, you're cute. I'll do anything you want, you know? So he's bragging about getting rid of shortening mandatory minimums. Paul Gazelka is talking about lengthening mandatory minimums. And, of course, he just jumps to carjackings because right now there's a solution. And then he's talking about assigning bonus for police. It goes against everything that we should be considering when we're hiring police officers. I also have a lot to say about some of the practices, warrior training. Police should not be going through warrior training.
Last traffic stop you make could be your last.
Exactly. Anyway, so Paul Gazelka makes it onto the list of
Casey Kasem's countdown of the stupidest things Republicans have done or said in the last few weeks. We'll be back with another GOP gubernatorial candidate.
Anyway, I have a doozy for the next one actually, and we're gonna do two in a row because they're so related to each other. I'm getting my confidence up for the Casey Kasem's list. But Mitch McConnell, of course, had a big breakdown on the Senate floor, a huge tirade. He's trying to make Biden into being just completely unhinged. You know, he says, I've known and I've liked and personally respected Joe Biden for many years. I did not recognize the man at the podium yesterday. The president's rant yesterday was incoherent
incorrect and beneath his office. Yesterday was with the world's largest megaphone. He invoked the literal civil war and said, "We are on the doorstep of autocracy. Domestic enemies, rhetoric unbecoming of a president of the United States."
He never really said that about Trump, did he? Trump was becoming of the president of the United States. It was a fascinating reading from Daily Cause. It was a fascinating bout of cognitive dissonance for McConnell. For 4 years of Donald Trump praising neo-Nazis, ranting about poop hole countries, and grousing about toilet flushing, and now Biden defending the right of people to vote is unbecoming of a U.S. president. McConnell also, it should be pointed out, in 1993, McConnell, he touted Jesse Helms, noted racist from the past, I believe from one of the Carolinas, I think North Carolina. He put up, there was a bill in 1993, so this isn't 1863, this is 1993. McConnell is sticking up for this bill so that the United Daughters of the Confederacy could keep some old patents, including one of the patents was for the design of the Confederate flag. McConnell joyfully stuck up for that. And, of course, there's the famous picture of McConnell back in the 90s where he's receiving some sort of award or giving something to somebody. And the backdrop is a Confederate flag. And now he's, you know, saying, you know, Biden, well, he says Biden's speech was deliberately divisive. Poured a giant can of gasoline on the fire. You know, he talked about that Biden was naming some known Confederates and he was comparing, you know, McConnell was saying he's comparing you know, legislators on both sides of the aisle to being like the Confederates. Now, McConnell liked the Confederacy in the 1990s. He stuck up for the Confederacy. And by the way, Kentucky was not part of the Confederacy. Kentucky was didn't go either way. That was part of the deal they made was Kentucky just wanted to stay out of it. They were a brand new state and they were not part of the Confederacy. I'm sure some guys in Kentucky maybe went down to fight for the Confederacy because Kentucky is very much like a southern state. But, you know, anyway, it's on the right on the border of between the North and South back in the Confederate days. So, of course, what he's saying is that Biden's doing a disservice to America by sticking up for voting rights. Voting rights was supported overwhelmingly in 2006, I believe it was, by both parties under the George W. Bush administration. I believe the voting for it in 2006, maybe it was 2005, but about 15 years ago, this included McConnell. In the Senate, it was voted in favor of upholding voting rights 98-0. It was also an overwhelming vote. I don't have the exact numbers in the House, but very, very overwhelming. McConnell was part of supporting voting rights then. Now he's against supporting voting rights because it's been 15 years later and the Republicans have run out of ideas on how they can win elections. They don't have any ideas, it seems, or at least they're afraid to tell us their ideas. They don't think they can get elected on their ideas. The only way they can get they've been cheating for decades in order to win elections. They have admitted that when the more people vote, the worse chance we have. Donald Trump said last year, talking about these voting rights bills, he said, "If these bills pass, no Republican will ever win an election in America again." They know that. They've said it. They say it publicly. So now McConnell doesn't want to support voting rights. He wants the counting to be taken over by state legislatures. He wants voting. He wants elections to be overturned. That's why he's saying what he's saying now, when he used to support voting rights legislation. So I believe that McConnell's tirade is helping the Democrats in getting to where they want to go. I know that I loved Biden's speech. I'm loving the Joe Biden kind of getting cranky with people. It's about time we start playing the game we're in. I'm sick of the Bill Clinton kind of thing. And I, as much as I love Barack Obama, he made a big mistake. I think, I think he knows that. I keep saying, I can just hear Barack Obama calling Joe practically every night saying, Joe, listen, don't talk to those guys. They're not going to cooperate. Don't give in. Remember how they screwed us. Remember that. Do you think Barack Obama ever like cusses? Seems like he doesn't, but I don't know. I think that the Democrats are being empowered by this. I think it's smart politically leading up to the midterm elections. I think having Biden be passionate and strong about what has been overwhelmingly popular in America is a good thing. And then having people like McConnell stand against him hurts Republicans. So I think it's a very deliberate move by the Biden administration. We'll talk about, we should take a break, but when we come back, I'm going to talk about what David Brooks had to say and just what I think of David Brooks. So let's take a short break and come back on the other side. AM 950, The Voice, Progressive Voice of Minnesota. AM 950, The Progressive Voice of Minnesota. We're back. Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt McDeal for one more day. Hopefully Matt will be back on Monday. He tested positive for the coronavirus, but he is doing well. He has mild to almost no symptoms, last I heard. So I said we were going to mention David Brooks. David Brooks wrote something in the New York Times, it's titled, America is Falling Apart at the Seams. Why are so many of us behaving so badly? And then the flavor of what he wrote, he made a statement. Today is the day for Biden to begin revamping his presidency in a more centrist direction. There's no path forward for a leftist agenda. So apparently David Brooks thinks that voting rights is a leftist agenda. Who else thinks that way? Republicans. David Brooks has pissed me off more than almost anybody over the last 20 years. The kind of guy where you're watching something like on a Sunday morning show or something, and there's a guy on and he's maybe a Republican or maybe not, and the person that you're watching it with says, oh, well, actually, he's not that bad. He sounds pretty reasonable. Those are the guys you got to keep an eye on. It's obvious where people like Trump or Ted Cruz or Marjorie Taylor Greene, it's obvious that they're not reasonable. But when there's somebody who's like, I don't necessarily really agree with what he says, but at least he's got a good argument. He's reasonable. That's David Brooks. That's the most evil of the evil. He's exactly wrong, and he knows it, but he wants Biden to fail as well. He wants Republicans back. He used to say he was a conservative, and then for a while during the Trump administration, he didn't. He just didn't say what he was. But he passes himself off as being, all knowledgeable. He knows everything about everything. He passes himself as being the expert. And of course, the media lets him do it. They're looking for guests. Hey, we haven't had David Brooks on for a while. You know, the New York Times is like, oh, David Brooks wrote an article. We haven't published him for a while. And he's telling Biden to tamp it down. Because things like voting rights, that's crazy. That's leftist. Anyone who uses the term leftist when they're talking about Democrats, he actually used the term leftish. What's wrong with left? That's where most of the country is. The agenda that Biden wants to do is overwhelmingly popular. Overwhelmingly popular. I mean, and what's some of the things that he has accomplished? Tell me if these are, let's see, I have a list here somewhere. As per usual, I have too many things going on, too long of a list. He added 6.4 million jobs. I believe it's up to more like 6.7. Anyway, 6.4 million jobs. He's been president for a little less than a year. He's added 6.4 million jobs. GDP growth is historic. Never has the GDP growth been this quickly going up. Unemployment is down to 3.9%. Stock market at all-time high. Pass the American Rescue Plan. Child poverty half. Largest vaccine rollout in history. Ended our longest war. $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill. That doesn't sound leftist to me. Let's come back and do the second hour. You're listening to AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt McNeil. For one more day, we're hoping Matt will be back on Monday. As you may have heard, he tested positive for COVID, but he is doing well. He's little to no symptoms. So he's doing all right and hoping to be back by Monday even. So we wish him well. Hope he's got some good movies lined up to watch over the weekend, you know. How about if we do another
Casey Kasem's countdown of the dumbest things Republicans have done lately? Number four. Our next artists are a group of people who support Trump who decided to sign forged documents and send to the American Archives and Congress.
These guys are finding themselves in huge trouble. You could add to Casey's list, pretty much all of the crime doers leading up to and on January 6th and afterwards. And, so in seven states now, there have been these false documents. And I think the January 6th committee is the one who's finding them because they're getting this information from the archives, the National Archives, who hold on to the elector information. So each state, the way it works is each state has electors. Anyone can be an elector. You don't have to be an elected official. I mean, you have to get elected by, you know, the people in the party to be an elector, but you don't have to be in the House or anything like that. I believe I was an elector one time, but and some states have it. You have to go along with who the state, the presidential candidate who won the state. So then the elector, and sometimes the electors have to go then by area of the state. But still, if a president won, then that elector piece of paper will show that there were more electors for the winning guy than the losing guy. Anyway, in seven states, these Republicans, Trump supporters, just decided, oh, we're the electors, and we're saying that Trump won. We all vote for Trump. But they're not electors. They're a fraud. And when you sign a fraudulent piece of paper like that, that's a major, you know, a felony. That's a federal felony. Michigan is one of the states, and their attorney general decided, yeah, I'm turning this over to the feds, giving it to the DOJ. They're going to investigate it now. And that investigation is not going to go well for the guys who signed it. And there's a couple women, but it's usually guys who do this kind of stuff. There was a camera and a guy with a microphone went up to one of these guys in Arizona, Arizona being one of the states. I think it was Arizona, Florida, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and I can't remember the other few states. But the guy panicked, you know. He said, well, in unprecedented times, we have to do unprecedented things. And the guy said, well, how did you find out that this was going to happen? Oh, you should talk to the party chair. Well, did you get a phone call? I mean, how did you find out that, you know, how did you even know to sign your name on this? Oh, you need to talk to the party chair. And he starts to walk away because now he's starting to panic because he's realizing, oh, man, nobody was supposed to find out about this. So it's going bad for them. And they made it on the list of Casey Kasem's
stupidest things the Republicans have done lately.
We have a call. Lynette from Chaska. Hello, Lynette.
Hi, Todd. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Well, I'm good. I heard that you were filling in for Matt today, so that's good. I'm glad you are, because who can fill in for Matt? I mean, you know, those are big shoes to fill.
It was short notice. Yeah. Yeah.
Just short notice. I know.
Yes. We talk very nicely about Matt when I'm sitting in for Matt.
I would be terrible at that. I'd be like, oh no, what do I talk about? But you have a lot of things to talk about. And, you know, I've been listening off and on. I had to go out and move my car and shovel snow and feed birds and things. But, you know, I did hear, I actually read a little bit of what you were saying about the David Brooks opinion piece in the New York Times. Like, it's such a big mystery. Like, oh, why is our... why is our society declining? I wonder what it could be. I wonder what it, oh, leftists? Oh,
yes,
really?
I know.
Left-ish. I love how that's the reason. I love it.
Yes, all these things that most Americans want. We got to stop that. We got to turn around from that.
Yeah. You know. Republicans never seem to be about prevention of any sort, you know.
No, we've been talking about that a lot. They're the party of no platform. They've got no ideas. Paul Gazelka's got a couple ideas, but they're exactly opposite from what everybody's been talking about lately,
even in his own party. What reasonable people would want. I mean, you know, okay, I mean, I grew up in a family where we had a lot of dysfunction, and I was the only one that went to counseling, and then I realized that when I heard crazy talk, that it was crazy talk. But, you know, it's Republicans are like, well, that crazy talk, that's good talking there, that's sanity. And it's like, I never can get over the fact that, you know, when Trump was debating Hillary Clinton and he's walking behind her and he's stalking her a completely horrible, sadistic human being. And I'm just sitting there going, why is no one stopping this? Why is this occurring on national TV? I wonder why our country's so bad. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I know. I know. Yeah. And it didn't start with Trump, but it seems kind of like it did. But Republicans have been going in a bad direction for decades.
I mean, you know, Paul Ryan, when he was when he was a legislator, I guess, Speaker of the House, I mean, he wanted his staff to read Ayn Rand books, which is all about being selfish and all this libertarian stuff. Gee, I wonder where this comes from.
Exactly. Well, that's conservatism, really. When people like David Brooks, when they talk about, you know, old conservatism, the way things were, like Reagan. I'm a Reagan conservative. Mm-hmm. Conservatism means never changing. We would have made no progress on anything if everybody was just a total conservative. You know, we would be afraid of fire still. You know, the guy who invented the wheel would be vilified because it's something new.
Scary, that round thing. Oh, my God.
Yeah, that works too well. That scares me.
That sounds safe.
Exactly.
I like the square block wheels that we invented. Bloomp, bloomp. Yeah, so anyway. Well, it's just sad and scary. I was listening also earlier, Tom Harmon was talking about, this is something you don't hear Republicans talk about because they never talk about anything prevention, but, you know, women, we're just supposed to have every baby that's possible. Like, that's a good idea. You know, just, have every baby, whether you can afford it or not, just have them.
I think I heard a little bit of what he was talking about, and he was saying actually that it directly correlates to population, the population explosion, you know, and in countries that where women have some power in the you know, of running the country, like Japan being one, and they have smaller families. They you know, they contribute less to the population problem, because there is a population problem. It's a really hard, difficult thing to talk about, because this, you know, solutions, well, how do you solve that, you know? I mean, so it's a very difficult thing. There are ways, I mean, there are ways of helping it, though.
Yeah, like letting women decide for themselves if they can afford or can have a baby or not.
Yeah, instead of, you know, forcing them to.
Yeah, I mean, like, or, really, that just seems like such a great idea.
There are countries, I think he even used the term, like, kind of ownership of women as opposed to letting women contribute. And I ran for office 8 years ago, 10 and 8 years ago. And I've decided now that, you know, I've been asked to run for office since that for, you know, seats local out where I live. And I just keep repeating, but I'm not a woman. I want a woman. You know, I want women to take more power at the legislature. You know, people like Kelly Morrison, who I helped get elected, she's a star down there. She's doing nothing but really great things, and she's doing tons of them. Mm-hmm. And the whole demeanor in her district has completely changed. You know, I mean, I live there, and there was a lot of divisiveness, and she came. Got elected, and everybody loves her. She's got a great demeanor, and it's brought a nicer atmosphere. Mm-hmm. Just going to places in the district, you know, you just feel less of that divisive sort of judgmentalness going on.
Well, do Republicans like women like that? They maybe like Marjorie Taylor Greene is more their flavor of woman.
Right.
What is it? I don't know what she is, really. I guess she's a woman? I don't know. She's really mean. That's all I know.
Yeah, so. Yeah. But you know, for the most part, I mean, I'm being a man, I'm the first one to say that women per capita have less bad and stupid ones than men.
Well, and I that's probably true. At least I'd like to think that that's true. I have a phrase that I'm fond of when I think of population, and because nobody likes crowds. I never hear anyone like say, oh, there's a crowd, let's go to something. No one likes to stand in line for anything. So my little phrase I like to say is, if you don't like crowds, don't start a crowd at home. That's my saying on population. So because that's where it starts, you know. And my mom used to have relatives. They were raised Catholic, and they used to have contests to see who could have more kids in the family. And she was an only child. And so anyway,
how many times can you do that contest? Yeah.
Well, it was a thing. I remember her talking about it. And then, you know, years later, one of my uncles was saying, oh, we don't drive on the freeway. And I said, why not? And they're like, oh, there's too many people there. I'm like, you raised 10 kids. I mean, just merge onto the freeway, wave at those people. Half of them are your kids and the other half are your grandkids. Talking about too many people? You helped to contribute to this.
And it's even a more difficult conversation in the United States because we have such vast space everywhere. You know, in Europe, you can't really fit any more people on, you know, in England.
So
they have no choice, you know. Whereas here, we've still got a lot of space to fill.
That's why in North Dakota, you know, they think, oh, well, there's no people problems. Like, fine. Why are you living out in the country? If you love people, why aren't you where it's densely populated? You say you love people and you want every baby born. That's what all the little billboards say when you get out in the country. Well, why aren't the people in the country living near lots of people? Because that's what they say they want. And this is what I get so confused with when it comes to population, is that no one likes crowds. And yet they're like, oh, Grandma, you have... what, how many grandchildren? Yay, that's so nice. But no one wants to stand in line with her grandkids. So it's just kind of hypocrisy, really.
Yeah,
and Republicans are all about that. So anyway,
rant. Well, it's a difficult subject to talk about, but I think it needs to be talked about a lot more. I'm glad you brought it up, and it's fun to have somebody else go on a rant when I'm on this show instead of just me. Or I would imagine Matt would feel the same way if you called in when he, you know, letting somebody else do a rant for a little bit. But listen, we got to take a break. It's been so nice to talk to you. Thanks again for calling in, Lynette from Chaska. Hope to talk to you sometime again soon. And okay. But we're going to take a break, and we'll come right back. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt McNeil. And we'll see you on the other side. It's hard to talk when I'm playing the drums this hard. Yeah. Okay, fade my drums out. Now I can talk better. Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt McNeil on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Casey Kasem's got another one on his list. I think we're down to number three of
Casey Kasem's countdown of the stupidest things Republicans have done lately. Number three. Our next artist is running for governor as a Republican in Minnesota. She often doesn't finish sentences or thoughts. She said, "The carpet's been pulled out from under people in Minnesota. We need a governor." And then she stopped talking.
Another thing she said is she talked about you to defend yourself. She says, as a woman and a mother, I should be able to defend myself. The Second Amendment, that's why I know the Second Amendment's not about hunting. It's about defending yourself. And when I'm governor, I'll make sure you can. That's just talking about guns. That's just a, you know, so, and here's then, we'll do the next one. Number two.
Our next artist got his start 11 years ago when he got a group to go against the first black president of the United States. He started what's called the Oath Keepers. And in reality, what they do is break their oaths to the Constitution.
So, yeah, the leader of the Oath Keepers, the guy with the eye patch, the Oath Keepers, he started them in 2009. Of course, the same moment that we had our first black president take office. And it's made up of military guys and policemen and firemen. So they have all been trained in firearms. And, well, I don't know about the firemen, but, they're military guys. And now, of course, you know, the news over the last couple of days is that they were a big part of storming the Capitol. 11 of them, I believe, including him, just got arrested yesterday for seditious conspiracy. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. Kind of doesn't matter. I think you know who he is, the guy with the eye patch. And the reason he's got the eye patch is because he dropped a loaded gun and it went off and shot his eye out. So is that what Michelle Benson means by you should be able to defend yourself? As a mother, you want to be safe, so you need to have that gun? Because bad things happen when there are a lot of guns around. Bad things happen to gun-related things happen to people who have guns. More bad things happen to them than to people who don't have guns. A lot of people get shot by their own gun because they don't know how to handle it. This guy supposedly knows how to handle it. He was in the military. And he dropped his gun and shot his own eye out. So, Michelle Benson, try again. Try again to come up with some ideas about why we want you to be our governor. Anyway, so the more about those guys, we talked a little bit about this yesterday, the seditious conspiracy. It's very major, and they are sitting in jail right now. I mean, they have become inmates. And like so many of these other people, like the people we just talked about, the guys who signed their names to the forged documents, all of a sudden these guys are starting to get scared, you know? Now, they were cooperating, and I saw some people talking about how this information got found. to get them arrested. Now, a lot of them had been arrested before and have been cooperating. Yeah, this person says, I'm told by an IT specialist that the chat messages would have required getting their phones. So, yeah, Harry Littman says, how would DOJ have gotten the goods on the Oath Keepers to charge seditious conspiracy? Only two ways, or he says two ways, emails and texts, some decoded, because they were sending coded texts and emails. Because, of course, they knew they weren't doing anything wrong. So, you know, but they still sent coded messaging. The second one is insider cooperators turned by prospect of 20-year sentence. So seditious conspiracy can lead to a hefty fine plus up to 20 years in prison. And when you get arrested and you're being told, we're busting you for seditious conspiracy, you could go to prison for 20 years. Do you want to talk to us about who told you to do this? A lot of them are going to start squeaking. So, and giving up their phones, of course. And that leads to the emails and texts. So really both things together is what led to this. It's well, and there for I'm looking further down. There's a report that the FBI seized phone of Oath Keepers' lawyer in the seditious conspiracy. So, yep, that's what got him. But they got, and now they're in prison. It's going to be a very interesting next few years. All of this stuff is going to. It's going to take a long time. Everybody's been complaining about Merrick Garland. To have something like this happen, to have 11 guys on one day arrested for seditious conspiracy, you don't do that unless you know you can convict them. You don't just arrest anybody for seditious conspiracy. If you're the DOJ, you want to make sure that it's going to stick. You want to make sure when you make those arrests that those guys are going to get convicted of seditious conspiracy. And it is incredibly difficult to build a solid case like that, much less 11 solid cases like that in a year, in 1 year. So, yeah, we can stop talking bad about Merrick Garland. Again, I know I might sound like a broken record, but Richard Nixon's Attorney General went to prison, but it took almost 4 years after the crime was committed and the cover-up. It takes time to build sentences. You know, everybody says, well, we know they did it. We saw him on video. Well, okay, if you're seen on video going into a store and the store gets held up and then somebody claims that, oh, we saw you go into the store that got held up, so we're going to arrest you. Do you want to make sure that you have a proper trial? Do you want to make sure that every fact is uncovered? Say you're not the one who held up the store. Say you just happened to go into the store and then it got held up, but somebody's accusing you of holding up the store. Do you want them to just throw you in jail? Because we saw you do it. We saw you go into the store. You know, if there's no snow on the ground and then you wake up in the morning and there is snow on the ground, you can say it snowed last night. So we saw you go into the store. So we can say you're the one who held it up. No, you're going to want to make sure that you get a fair trial. All of these guys deserve a fair trial. Yes, we know what they did. We know what Trump did. We know what all these people did. But we also have a system in this country where you can't just throw people in jail when you think you know what they did. Now, even if you know what they did. So we need to be patient. This is the largest, most complex investigation and crime in the history of the country. So it's going to take some time. They're moving very quickly. There's been probably about 800 now arrests. It was up in the high 70s a couple days ago. You know, that's an awful lot. And there's been a lot of convictions, a lot of people pleading guilty. A lot of people are sitting in jail because of what they did on January 6th. Most of them were things like breaking and entering and breaking a window and stealing something. But these guys are in prison for seditious conspiracy. That's a really difficult case to make. And the DOJ feels confident that they can make the case. And they've done it to 11 guys in a year. So I have a lot of confidence in our DOJ. I have a lot of confidence in our attorney general. I have a lot of confidence in our president and vice president. And if they keep keeping their heads down and don't worry about any polls and what people are saying, if they just keep their heads down and keep doing the work and trying to do the difficult things, it's going to go well for them and it's going to go well for us. So we just need to be patient. So I hope you're with me on that. Let's just be patient and watch this thing unravel, because it's going to kind of be fun. I want it to last for a while. So anyway, we should take a break and come back. You're listening to AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt McNeil. Give us a call, 952-946-6205. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt McNeil. We're talking about all kinds of stuff. Somebody wrote, and this person wrote on Twitter. I don't really know who she is, but she makes a really good point. She says, the presence of colorful individuals like Jake Angeli, the shirtless Q shaman, directed media and public attention away from the trained professionals, giving the deadly enterprise of overturning U.S. democracy a cartoonish air. That's a very important point to make. The Oath Keepers were able to do their work with the cameras not being on them because, you know, everybody's attention was going to the crazy things that were going on. You know, cops getting beat up outside, this Q shaman guy, you know, doing all his freaky, you know, he was like yelling stuff and just, you know, of course, was dressed all freaky. So everybody's looking at that and looking at the stuff getting stolen. The Oath Keepers are running around and they're trying to steal stuff, you know, information. And, you know, if you remember seeing some videos where there were some guys looking through some desks of senators on the Senate floor, you know, they're looking at possibly very high, you know, national security kind of secret stuff, you know, who knows what they could have got. So, and you know, so we're basically on the subject of the Oath Keepers doing this thing and getting seditious conspiracy charges against them. There are just, it seems like Republicans in general are ignoring the, our laws. They think they can break the laws. Thomas Massie, a representative, I can't remember what state he's from, but of course he's a Republican. The D.C. vaccine mandate, he says this, the D.C. vaccine mandate kicks in this weekend. My office will not comply. We will not show papers. We will not order takeout from restaurants that require papers for dine-in. We will get our food from Virginia or we will bring it to work. Shame has befallen our nation's capital. And when he uses terminology like, we will not show papers, that's how they're trying to hint that this is like a Nazi Germany situation, when in reality, it's just people making rules to try and protect us from you. You know, it's fine if you don't want to get the vaccine and don't want to wear a mask, but then you cannot participate in fun things with other people. Another guy, Scott Jensen, he wrote a bill. You know, he can't really, you know, I mean, I guess anyone can write a bill, but, and I'm remembering now, he does actually have sponsors and stuff, and it's people like Grunhagen and, you know, the crazies of the crazy, the craziest of the crazy in Minnesota Republicans. Scott Jensen has a bill, and it's called the Health Freedom Sanctuary State Bill, that basically says that the federal laws cannot be taken place in Minnesota. You know, and of course it comes to like mask mandates and vaccine mandates and stuff like that. That's what he's getting all uppity about. But the health freedom sanctuary state is basically, it's kind of like seceding from the union. You know, it's saying, no, you can't, the federal United States government cannot make a law that in my state, you know, and that's not how it works in this country. The states that didn't want to go along with some of the stuff that, that Abraham Lincoln wanted to do, they seceded from the Union. It's the exact same sentiment. So basically, Scott Jensen is a secessionist who's running for governor. You can draw a line. And then we have the other Republicans. Representative Stauber from District 8 in Minnesota. That's the northern part of Minnesota, includes Duluth. He touts airport grants. He's bragging about how, yeah, the airport's going to be improved in Duluth because of these grants. Well, those grants are funded by the infrastructure bill that he voted against. It's just, I can't say it on the air. It's a fire hose of poop. I can say that on the air. It's just a fire hose of crap. So many things that none of them, we can't pay attention to any one of them because there's just too many of them, whether it be crimes that Republicans have been committing, especially over the last 4 years. Just even this stuff coming out of Trump's mouth just alone when he was president. You can't keep track of it. Any one thing, when you really focus on it, would have brought down the presidency of every other president the United States has ever had. Basically, any one thing Trump said. But he said a million of them. So we can't keep them straight. It's just, it's whack-a-mole, you know? It's all the things that are going on. Now, how many, we have how many gubernatorial candidates on the Republican side? Something like 6 or 7. And they're all saying crazy stuff. And they can all get away with it because nobody's keeping track of any one of the things any one of them are saying. One of them, Kendall Qualls, he's the only Republican gubernatorial candidate of color, and his big thing he's running on is, he titles it, The Fallacy of Critical Race Theory. So he's the black guy talking about that we shouldn't be teaching history of black people in our country because it's going to make white people feel guilty. Now, you know, he's going to have quite an uphill battle. I think Matt talked about this last week. He's going to have quite an uphill battle in outstate Minnesota. I'm sure he's being advised because, you know, he ran against Dean Phillips in District 3, my district. It's actually the western part of Hennepin County, the western suburbs around the Twin Cities, going all the way out to the edge of Hennepin County. He got beat really horribly by Dean Phillips. And I'm sure then his advisors were like, well, that's because, you know, it was in the Twin Cities and you're a conservative, you're a Republican. You know, it's really hard for a Republican to win anywhere near the Twin Cities. If you run for a bigger office, if you run for governor, well, then you're going to have all of outstate Minnesota being able to vote for you. And that gives you a way better chance. But of course, these people are forgetting about the bigotry that exists in outstate Minnesota. I'm not saying everybody in outstate Minnesota. And I think it's a very good thing, we're having a lot of people of color moving to parts of outstate Minnesota, even starting businesses and restaurants in small towns in outstate Minnesota. That's great. Hopefully things can get evened out. But there's an awful lot of bigotry in outstate Minnesota, and I don't think they're going to support, you know, I mean, when it goes to the convention, the the Republican convention and you get all these delegates from outstate Minnesota, I don't see them voting for a black guy. No matter what he says, they don't care what he says. They just care about the color of his skin. So I think he's going to have a hard time even getting the nomination in the Republican. Republican Party will not allow it. I think Michelle Benson's going to have a big problem because she's a woman. In the meantime, the Democratic Party is voting in record numbers, overwhelming amounts of women everywhere in the whole country. We've got two women senators. We've got a woman auditor. You know, these are all state seats. By the way, even if Kendall Qualls does become the candidate, the endorsed candidate, the Republican endorsed candidate, you know, then you're dealing with the fact that none of these statewide seats, you know, all the way down to state auditor and secretary of state and, you know, all of these statewide seats, a Republican has not won any of these seats in 15 years. And if you think that more people are into the Republican Party after this whole Trump mess, you know, the ones that are still for it are the loudest. So you may have the illusion that it's a real strong. I mean, this is what Trump does all the time.
I had so many people at my rally and Joe didn't have any. How could he have won?
Yeah, you know, that's not how it works. There was a pandemic going on and most people appreciated that Joe Biden was cognizant and trying to keep people safe. He invented new ways of being a presidential candidate. Trump just had, you know, huge super spreaders. People like Dr. Birx and other experts say that hundreds of thousands of Americans did not need to die of COVID. Once if we would have done it right from the very beginning, we would be talking more like maybe 100,000 people instead of 900,000 people. Probably going to exceed 1 million. I mean, we're used to this now, again, because it's just a fire hose of poop. There's just so much, and we're kind of deadened to it. And that's deliberate, by the way. That's a tactic that Nazis used. You know, if you just, you kind of exhaust people. Keep repeating the lie. Keep acting as absurd as you want to. That's what Trump started doing. I remember especially when they had their, his first press secretary, the little guy who dressed up like the Easter Bunny. The first press hearing, and he said that the crowd was bigger than any crowd ever, when we all saw with our very own eyes that it was a fraction of the size of especially Obama's crowds. It was basically the fraction of the size of any crowd that's gathered for such an event in our lifetimes. They just started doing it. Just tell the huge lie and repeat it and repeat it. So now that's what we expect. The Republicans, when I say Scott Jensen is basically a secessionist, you know, he wants to put up a law and enforce it as governor to disallow the federal government from having any law that is enforceable in Minnesota. You know, he's a secessionist. That's crazy. That's crazy. Stauber touting the airport grants when everybody knows he voted against the bill that brought those grants. That would have brought down a politician 5-6 years ago. 5 or 6 years ago, that one thing he did, he would have caught so much crap for it. It would have really hurt him politically. Now, we just expect it. We expect it from all of them. We expect it so much that we accept it. That's not a good place to be. We've got a lot of work to do. Believe it or not, I feel very optimistic about it. I might not sound like it, but I am very optimistic about it. Let's take a break and come back and finish out the second hour on a Friday and then start the weekend. I'm Todd Mickelson on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. We'll be right back. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Tom Nicholson sitting in for Matt McNeil, and we have Casey Kasem here. He's doing a countdown. Casey, you want to take the next one?
It's Casey Kasem's countdown of the stupidest things Republicans have done lately.
Number one!
Our next artist is a senator from Kansas who doesn't seem to know what he's talking about. And then when somebody tells him what he's talking about, he still doesn't know just what he's talking about.
Senator Roger Marshall from Kansas. I don't know if you heard this exchange. It was kind of funny. But Anthony Fauci getting grilled again by people like Rand Paul and other Republicans. They're trying to have a committee. They're trying to talk about the safety of Americans in a pandemic. But all these Republicans are trying to do is just discredit Fauci. And it's caused Fauci's whole family to get death threats and get hassled. And, you know, he's got to have heightened security. I think it was the day before yesterday, he was in the congressional committee. And this guy,
Senator Roger Marshall,
he started to talk about it, not really sure, but I'm reading a little bit from the Washington Post. It was particularly striking about it was that Marshall did not seem to know precisely what he was talking about. He brought up the idea that Fauci had not shared financial disclosures like other government officials. And when Fauci assured him that he had and that they were available to all Americans, Marshall resumed talking about it as if Fauci had granted his premise. So then it led to, you know, so they're going back and forth, and he's basically saying, how come we can't see how much money you make? You're one of the highest paid government officials, and what do you do with your money? Why can't we see what's going on with your money? And then Fauci, you know, he goes, It's there. It's you can go on the internet and look at all of my financials, everything. It's available to the public. Anyone can look at it. If you're, you know, and he said his staff wanted to know. So apparently his staff is just as dumb as he is. You know, nobody on his whole staff thought of just going to the place that you to look that up. So yeah. Here's the exchange. Marshall, yes or no, would you be willing to submit to Congress and the public a financial disclosure that includes your past and current investments? After all, your colleague, blah, 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 and every member of Congress submits a financial disclosure that includes their investments. And then Fauci says, I don't understand why you're asking me this question. My financial disclosure is public knowledge and has been so for the last 37 years or so. And then Marshall argued, without explaining himself, that somehow big tech was preventing the disclosure of Fauci's investments. He goes, big tech giants are doing an incredible job of keeping it from being public. We'll continue to look for it. Where would we find it? And then Fauci says, all you have to do is ask for it. You're so misinformed. It's extraordinary. All you have to do is ask for it. And then Marshall goes, this is a huge issue. Wouldn't you agree with me that you see things before members of Congress would see them? And Fauci goes, what? And then Marshall goes, so that there's an error, maybe some shenanigans are going on. You know, I don't think I assume that's not the case. And Fauci goes, Senator, what are you talking about? I assume it's not the case. My financial disclosures are public knowledge and have been so. You are getting amazingly wrong information. So what? I cannot find them. Our office cannot find them. Where would they be if they're public knowledge? And then he kind of gets cut off by the chair. But it's still, you know, he's still like, where? And Fauci goes, it is totally accessible to you if you want it. For the public? Is that accessible to the public? Yes, to the public. Okay, to the public. You are totally incorrect. We look forward to reviewing it. And then the chair finally shuts it down, but they forget to shut off Fauci's mic. And you can hear him go, oh, what a moron. Jesus Christ. So that was the funny moment. But now Marshall is introducing the Fauci Act. So he's introducing legislation that is going to force Fauci to disclose his financials, even though it's disclosed. It's readily available for anyone who wants it. So he wins number one in Casey Kasem's countdown of the stupidest things Republicans have done lately. Senator Roger Marshall. Yeah. So yeah, I'm glad we could get that number one in. Here's another thing. St. Thomas College Republicans, they don't seem to have good ideas of what to do or how to phrase things. The St. Thomas College Republicans tweeted support Thursday for a Holocaust denier and white nationalist after he was kicked off of Getter. Getter is the new social media thing that was started by Jason Lewis, the Trump's guy. So this is the newest, you know, crazy Trumpist right far right wing new thing, you know, that they're telling everyone to go to because they're telling them to get off of Twitter and Facebook because they're being canceled on those platforms. He even got kicked off of Getter. Now, this is a guy who was at the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville in 2017. He's one of the guys with the tiki torches saying Jews will not replace us. And when he got kicked off of Getter, St. Thomas College Republicans decided to support him and fight against him being canceled. The St. Thomas College group has also reposted this guy, Fuentes, on Gab, a social media network that became a home for the right-wing extremists and QAnon followers. So, first of all, why are they even meddling around on those kind of platforms? Do they want everyone to know QAnon people? I mean, the St. Thomas College Republicans, of course, the last leader, she had to leave because she was trafficking young girls with, what's his name, Lazaro. The previous University of St. Thomas chapter chair of the Minnesota College Republicans was arrested last year on federal sex trafficking charges. And now they're sticking up for Holocaust deniers and the such. I don't know why. So I hope you're all updated now on all the shenanigans going on. And hopefully still feeling good about the direction we're going to take this country in spite of all of these things. I'm Todd Mickelson, been sitting in for Matt McNeil. Hopefully Matt will be back on Monday. You've been listening to AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.